Are you listening?
Hey, fam, welcome to the Future Is Here podcast. This is for the leaders, the dreamers, provocateurs, misfits, the frustrated frontline leaders who are charging in the kingdom. If you're tired of a reactive church, it's time to build a church we dream of now. The future is here, so don't get left behind.
Are you listening?
Let's get into it. What's up, family, and welcome to another episode of the Future Is Here podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Nixon. I'm also the CEO of Urban Youth Workers Institute. Now, if you've been following our podcast for a little while, you know we're all about saying the future is here. What do I mean by that? Look, in 2045, the majority in this country becomes a minority, meaning white folks become the minority. So we know that. And we also know from demographics that the world is increasingly young, it's urban, it's multi-ethnic. And so I really see our movement, along with some others, our leaders who are next generation, you know, ethnic urban leaders, this is the future. But what's crazy is, you know, in 2045, when that change happens, for those who are 18 and under, that happened in 2020. And so we're already living in the future. That generation that we're looking at, that, by the way, is leaving by the millions every year, 1.2 million young people are leaving the church every year. That's the reality they're living in. And so this podcast is really just here to explore all the different facets of that. And what can we do as kingdom leaders and Christ followers? What can we do to join in on what God's doing in the world to reach this next generation, to see his kingdom advance, and to continue to renew the church? So I am here today with a friend of mine, Grant Skeldon, man. Welcome to the podcast, brother. I'm excited you're on. Thanks for being here, bro.
Yeah, bro. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I met Grant and I met actually on a trip in Guatemala. Now, what's crazy about that, and I was talking to Grant about this the other day, was that was only a year ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and COVID, it's eight years ago.
For real, though. And it seriously feels like that. It feels like we were in Guatemala together. We were on a Compassion International trip. And what's funny about that, Grant, it's really interesting, dude. You're a dynamic dude. You're an author. You've started all these things. And I'll let you tell some of the things that you're involved in. But you were just, what I noticed about you, brother, is you were just kind of in the cut. You know, like just kind of like just watching and learning. You'd ask really great questions. And then I did some research on you afterwards, man. I found out you're a big deal, bro. I didn't know, man. So so excited to have you on today. But yeah, tell our audience a little bit about, you know, what you're involved in. And you just made a transition to a new space. Give it a little background for us.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like you said, I guess in the background, it's you said you're Enneagram 8-7, and I'm the same thing, 8-7. I don't know. I'm okay with like other people being, if I'm in a group room of leaders, I don't need to one up any leaders. Like y'all be the leaders. Like I'm totally content being, I want to have fun, but I don't have to be like getting all the attention. And so I think also similar to yourself, I love creating environments for diverse young leaders. So many of these guys, like you're gathering and I'm gathering, they need a place where they can take their cape off. I mean, they're in hard, difficult environments where they're the missionaries, they're the minority, not even just like literally in the sense of race, but just there's not a lot of young Christian leaders out there anymore. If leadership is lonely, then being a Christian as a millennial or Gen Z, I mean, that's crazy lonely. I mean, you're not getting points for being a Christian leader in the next generation. What once used to be a culture that was kind of like, I heard Keller say this once where he said, 20 years ago, culture felt like the church was irrelevant. Now today, the culture feels like the church is hostile towards them. And so you can get canceled really quick. You can get just isn't helpful to be to your profile or you climbing any ladders in the culture by being a very bold, grounded biblical worldview Christian in the next generation. And so all that to say is what I try to do is disrupt division in the church. I love to recruit, unite, and develop some of the most diverse, dynamic young Christian leaders across the country. I have a special emphasis on Christians that are in culture in the sense of they're not in vocational ministry. I do feel like since so few young people in each generation even go to church, then we do need to kind of switch up our tactic to, of course, always train pastors. But also, we've for a while, seminaries have so highly focused on only training pastors that we're not training leaders that are representing Christ in the culture. I mean, as you and I know, I mean, as much as me and you, Tommy, are like intentional about, we're not just growing to grow, but growing to reach others and go into hard places. The day-to-day life, though, of a person in full-time ministry is, we look at our calendar over the next 2 weeks, it's a lot of meetings with mostly Christians. You got to work hard in our in our life to get outside of the life of just being around Christians. But for those that are in Hollywood or those that are professional athletes or those who are in the marketplace or artists or whatever it may be, these young Christian leaders that are like one of the girls I'm thinking about, I just connected with recently, she's in Broadway. She's in the show. She's in Mean Girls. She's one of the top three girls singing in Mean Girls. That culture that she's in is not, I mean, it's not, being a Christ follower is just not the thing. And so how sad would it be if they didn't even feel like they're true ministers or missionaries, or they're the B team and we're the A team? Like, yo, Jesus came and could have chose anyone to be. He could have picked Sadducees, Pharisees, scribes, and he chose a lot of people that were not in ministry to be missionaries. And so it's not an either or, it's a both and. I always say the disciples did well, but I mean, eventually he came back one more time to get a guy in ministry, to get Paul, and he changed the game. So it's both and, but for this generation, I'm all about how can we find Christians that are already in culture? A lot of people are watching them, following them, seeing them, looking up to them. And so what that practically looks like is over the years, I've done a lot of retreats or trips for high caliber young Christian leaders, very racially diverse. There's about 450 young leaders that have come to one of these retreats. And I actually did the metrics recently to see how many people follow these guys online. It was crazy. It was 219 million people follow these 450 young leaders across the country. And most of them are in their 20s. And they are believers. I would say it varies in the strength of their faith, but that's a big part of what I also want to do is bring in these guys that consider themselves Christians and put them around more bold, strong believers and say, hey, this is how you can better leverage your platform and what God's doing through you. It's what First Timothy 4:12 says is don't let anyone look down on you because you're young, but set the believers an example. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get at these guys. Hey, set everyone else an example. This is what it looks like to be a Christian, and to love Jesus and to change the world.
Man, I love that, dude. Okay, so let's just get into it, man. I had some other intro stuff, but I love everything that you just shared right there. So I'm a power structure guy. I look at institutions and I'm very much like, all right, because if we're the same, right, on the Enneagram scale, like I'm looking at like bottom line, dude, how do you move the needle? Like what I want to see change happen. Let's get to the impact. Let's deal with the bull crap. Like just, okay, why? So everything you just described and even those 450 that really have a reach of 219 million, that's incredible. And I love that you figured that number out because it's impactful. You know, what would you say, what are some of the structural issues or barriers that stop the engagement with your generation and young people like that and younger people like that? What are some of the barriers on our side, you know, on the church side, on the Christianity institutional side that stop that cause that kind of weird dichotomy, you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, well, you know, we do ministry over here, but you're on Broadway. So, you know, does that make sense? Like what do you see as some of the issues there?
Man, it's kind of a long answer, but
yeah, that's all right, man. We want to hear you talk, bro.
I'll say two things. My short answer, like if I could put it into a sentence, it would probably be, we so over glorify the gift of teaching and speaking and worship leading and under glorify literally every other gifting, maybe event planning too. I'd put that. I mean, I feel like, you know, if you want to succeed in the church world, get really good at speaking, really good at leading, really good at building a new organization and really, really good at hyping people up to come back next week, you'll kill it in the American church. I just don't know if that's what I felt like Jesus was looking for when he was looking at his disciples. Like, let me find the best speakers, leaders, entrepreneurs, hype people to promote an event and get them to come back next week. But man, just coming out of Dallas, I was just like, I'm in Nashville now. I work for Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons. But like when I was in Dallas, I always thought, man, Dallas might just be the biggest living proof that big, big gatherings don't change communities. I mean, Dallas is maybe everybody. I felt like it's so ironic that so many people are coming from out of the country to come to conferences or see the big churches here. And I always thought it's so funny. It's like people are looking at these churches and these conferences as very successful. And I think, I mean, you do the math and eventually you see, actually, this is like proof that this doesn't work. Think about it. It's like there are 4,800 churches in Dallas, Texas. That's enough churches. It would take 72 years for someone to go to each church every Sunday. If they gave like literally every Sunday, they go to a new church. In order for them to reach all 4,800 churches in Dallas and truly visit them and see them, it takes 72 years for them to go to. It's like so many churches, and some of those churches are massive, like huge. It's Dallas is the only city I've ever been to where I've seen pastors. You meet a pastor. Hey, oh, I'm a pastor. Oh, where do you pastor this church? And eventually the question, oh, how many people go to your church? And I'm the only city I've ever seen a pastor say like, only like 2,000. Like we're kind of a smaller church. And I'm like, yo,
it's insane, right?
In parts of the country, that'd be huge. And so my point is, we just focus so much on the gathering and less on like the scattering. And I think, again, even COVID is another proof that like we put so much on it. And I just think if, for example, Dallas, with all these big churches and all these big gatherings and all these big conferences, if that changed the world, truly, wouldn't Dallas's wouldn't anti-human trafficking work be at the best in Dallas? Wouldn't racial problems, we'd never have any of those. There'd never be unarmed people getting shot there. There would never be police officers getting shot there. We'd never have any type of socioeconomic problems. But in reality, I mean, Dallas has all the same problems, sometimes even worse than other cities. And so to me, I was like, okay, so I don't want to go and chase and put all this work into trying to build a model that one, I don't even see Jesus doing really. Like it really hit me hard when I was reading the Bible and I saw Jesus had the 5,000. I was like, this is a successful pastor in Dallas. This is what would give him a pat on the back. Is this, they would even introduce Jesus in Dallas as this is the guy who he came out to our city. He got 5,000 people to come listen to him preach. That would be his thing. Like he's got 5,000, but he leaves them like the worst. Billy Graham would have got fired if he did the kind of follow-up that Jesus did. He just chunks the deuce and is like, hey, I love teaching you guys, but I'm out of here. I'm going to keep discipling these 12 guys. And I'm like, yo, they would have like no follow-up. No, you didn't build a mega church. You didn't start a podcast. You didn't start something new and say, let's at least do the conference and come back once a year this day and do this for the next 10 years. Didn't do any of the stuff we would do. And I even think either we're better leaders than Jesus or you're doing it really wrong. I don't know. And so I started asking myself, so what is it? And I really feel like why the most cause-oriented generation in the world right now is not connecting to the most cause-oriented organization in the world right now, the church, is because the most cause-oriented organization right now is not taking their cause that serious. And I think the cause is making disciples. Our call to action is far more every week is almost, I always joke pastors, why whenever you announce church next week, you're always like, you got to come back next week. You don't want to miss it. I was like, we always do that with our hands. Like you don't want to miss it. I was like, yo, that's, you might not think of it this way, but you got one call to action each week. What is it? And basically it's come back next week.
Come back. Yeah.
But if you go look at nonprofits and you go look at these organizations that young people are leaving the church to join, these causes, marches, just being a part of something, they're not saying, hey, just chill and come back next week. It's get off your butt and let's go change the world. People are hurting and they need you. And I just think, man, that's what Jesus was kind of doing. Hey, come and follow me, not come back next week and listen to me speak. And so all that to say, this generation with all their unbelievable gifts and talents and influence, I just think they're way more attracted to the world's causes that aren't eternal and won't make eternal impact than the church, which is, I think, the right place. It's just got the wrong urgency and the wrong message right now in some way. But I have hope that it's going to change. I get excited. I'm thankful that the next generation is tired of church being just a gathering and a Sunday attendance in a building.
If you like what you're hearing, keep listening, but also make sure to check out our newest leadership resource, The Leadership Journey, by hitting up our website at uywy.org. Oh, man, I couldn't even say it better myself, brother. I love hearing you talk because I'm all about all that. Now, a couple of years ago, 2019, you wrote a book called Passion Generation, right? Mm-hmm. And really what it was about was this call to discipleship, right?
Yeah.
And that's really what, so, you know, friends, and we'll say it again at the end, but, you know, go check out Grant's book, Passion Generation. I watched a little video on it. I haven't read it yet, brother. So full confession, man, but I watched the video on it and now it's compelling, man. And I think you're right in all that. Now, but let's talk about specifics on this, some practicals. And that's what the book is about, really, is a practical guide to this, to the discipleship piece of it. But, you know, when we look at the generations a little bit, so I kind of look at it like this, and please disagree with me, push back, but however, whatever. But it's almost like, okay, boomers kind of that generation, and there's a lot of great things there. I honor and respect, but they built this institution that we now are experiencing and that now all these young people are leaving, right? So they built that and they maintained it, and they're still, and let's be real, in some spaces, they're still holding on to it really tightly.
No, they are.
And then you have my generation. I'm at the very end of Gen X, right? And we're kind of like the whatever generation. So coming from a lot of divorce, I was a latchkey kid. I was like all that, right? And it's kind of like, okay, and we figured some things out. And so we're still kind of punk rock, but resilient. But, I don't know how much we were like changing the game. It was just kind of like, okay, well. And then you have your generation. So then millennials show up, right? And I love you said the most cause oriented generation, but you guys are a little bit like you're starting to point out all the issues. Like you're like, dude, you know, this isn't really working. And yet you have a generation coming behind you, Gen Z, that is very different. They're not the same as millennials. They're different, right? And they bring their own giftings, like just like millennials do in your generation, just like Gen X and, you know, and before us. Yeah. But what does it look like then? Because then it feels like your generation is in a tough spot. Because what you got handed off to you in a lot of ways, as you know, you described it, but was pretty weak, man. I mean, And discipleship, right?
Well, okay, let me ask you a question on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like you said, you guys said handed what we got handed off to. Because I don't feel like there's still been a general across the kingdom in the American church a handoff. I don't think there's been a handoff.
Okay,
so I'm curious.
I hear you on that, bro. Yes.
If you know, but I think that's the case. Like that's, I want to talk about that as a problem. That's setting us back 10 to 15 years every generation.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious for y'all. Do you feel like at let's say 30, as I'm 31 now, just turned 31 a couple weeks ago, would you say that around that age you got a handoff? Because I think, like you said, I think the boomers are still mostly hanging on. Xers are starting to finally get some power. And as someone in the 30s, I'm seeing my generation start to feel like, okay, I'm finally starting to get naturally without any request a seat at the table. And I'm feeling this temptation. Well, I'm like, I bet every generation feels it is. All their 20s, they got like told, just wait, earn your, like, just do it. And then maybe 30s, maybe if you're lucky. And I feel like I'm on the front end of most millennials. So it better usually comes at 40 is when you finally start getting a seat at the table. And I'm like, well, finally, I'm going to just ride this out. And technically in this table, I'm the young guy. And so I can ride this for 10, 15 years and be the young guy at the table. And it's like only about 50, 60. You're like, okay, we got to start thinking young, which to them is 40. And I'm like, that's fine. It's just, you know, the guys we're helping train, when they're thinking young and who they're reaching, it's teenage and 20 something.
20s, yeah. No, I mean, I think that's such a good question, brother. And I appreciate that because, and I think you and I, so personality wise, you and I did the same thing in a lot of respects. We looked at the landscape and we're like, nah, I'm not with it. I'm going to have to start my own thing. And I did, right? I mean, I was like, okay, like I could call people out on their hypocrisy all day long and all that, but let me look inward. What's my hypocrisy? Why don't I go try to live it out, right? And you saw the issue and you started living that. But I think for a majority of people, you're right, man. When I'm thinking about it, I'm already thinking, how are we building into those 20-somethings? Because really, those who are holding on to power, so boomers, okay, we'll pick on them right now. But boomers, if you ask any of them, hey, when did you start leaving? What are they going to say? In their 20s? I mean, they a lot of those guys started when they were really young and they started it. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, well, then you got to let go and let these next guys come up. I mean, you guys at your age, I think you should be charging. You know what I mean? And so I'm almost wondering, is it my generation, Gen X, that's just got to make the quick handoff and just go, look, we just learned from the other thing. And I'm here to really just say, here, let me tell you all my mistakes. You know what I mean? I mean, I think that's kind of the space to go. I think you're absolutely right in that, man. So, so then I turn around and ask you the same question for millennials. What does that mean for, so if you're a Gen Xer, you're at my, I'm 40. I think I'm just 10 years older than you, brother. So I'm 42, born in 78, super weird. Like I'm almost a micro generation. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I didn't use the internet until I was in college. Like part of that was because of, we had no money, but, right. So there's me, but I had video games growing up, you know, but what does that mean for millennials and then reaching Gen Z? So I, you have any thoughts about that? Because that's a real generational thing that we really got to look at. And for Gen Xers, we got to go, hey man, I know you're waiting for that big chance, but maybe we just got to take the L on this or the sacrifice play.
For sure. And I do think so. I had a story that happened like months before COVID, in November. And, basically, I was speaking at this big, it was the biggest thing I've ever spoke at. If we look at like attendance, it was like, I think 50, 70,000, mostly young people. And, it was at a stadium, like for NASCAR, type of big thing. I think it got you muted. Anyway,
yeah, no, so it's not, sorry, man. I was like, of course it was in Texas.
Yeah. Again, it was just like as every other week. And so all that to say, I'm supposed to do a 15-minute message. However, 3 days before they kind of say, hey, instead of you doing your message, we want to do a panel on the next generation. It's going to be just you and another guy though. So I'm like, all right. I mean, I've been prayerfully thinking about this. This is a big opportunity and a huge audience, but let's do it. I mean, let's do the panel instead. So I'm like, who's the other guy on the panel? And I'm 29 at the time. And so the guy on the panel is like 19 years old and is a Gen Z kid. He's been mobilizing hundreds of kids in high school to go and do overseas missions and all this stuff. And a brilliant strategy. It's called How to Life. His name is Jordan Whitmer. He gets like these big YouTubers, online people to like use their leverage their platform to do like these local gatherings, even international in other countries. And they'll gather like 200, 300 kids and then just get that really well-known famous Christian person to tell their testimony. And then they come in and just preach the gospel, lead people to Christ. It's awesome. And so all of the funny part was whenever they had to speak, they asked me first, hey, tell us about why is it so important for the next generation to know Jesus? So naturally I'm talking about millennials. I'm 29 and I'm talking about the millennial generation knowing Christ. And then they ask him same question. And he kind of says, you know, one thing I do want to say when we say next generation, though, is like when I think of next generation, I do think of Gen Z. I'm thinking of like the next generation, the true next generation. He said, but when most people talk about next generation, they're always talking about millennials. But reality is Gen Z is here right now. Like we're even getting into college and all that. And he said, so I was like, as much as I love the older generations over here, and he's kind of pointing to me. And he's like, I think we need to start focusing on the next generation, Gen Z. And I'm just like, yo, this dude's like trying to old man me at 29 years old. He's calling me the old man. And I'm just like, yo, this is what I make people feel like all the time. Cause I've seen how you do it all over the country where I come in and they'll be like, dude, usually I'm the young guy, but I guess you're now the young guy. And I always told myself seeing that happen. Cause I could tell like they were joking, but I could see it was like, oh, you kind of attach your identity to being the young guy a little bit. But I always told myself, don't do that too much. Like, and I've heard enough old people say, hey, you're going to wake up one day and you're not going to be the young guy. Enough people said that. I'm like, it must be true. Time just keeps going faster and faster and faster. And so all that to say is, I just told myself, one, don't attach my identity to that. But then two, I thought, well, when I become the old guy, then I'm going to work really, really hard to not forget what it's like to be the young guy. Cause I swear all y'all forgot or something. Cause y'all, it's like, I got to bring you back. I've seen so many messages where I feel like I got to bring you back to what it felt like when you were trying to reach the next generation, but you didn't have resources. You didn't have the support. No one was opening doors for you. No one was connecting you. No one was putting their neck on the line for you. And so all that to say, when that kid did that, I was like, all right, if this is kind of like the next kid, I'm sure he's one of many that are kind of starting to rise up, but maybe not getting too much attention. Then I want to shift gears at 30 and be like, okay, the next 30 to 40, how can I start setting you guys up from 20 so that when you get to 30, you're 10 years ahead of where I was. But I did feel a temptation of, I'm starting to really get the doors that I always wish would be open and the opportunities I always wish I would have. I feel like around 30 and married now, I see a lot of opportunities come that I didn't have before when I was a young single dude. And it really lastly reminded me of David and Saul. I think that's the best example of, like, I always ask myself, what if Saul was healthy enough, content enough, solid in his identity enough that he never got jealous of David? Like, how much could Israel and the kingdom have flourished if Saul and David could have worked together rather than spending years with tension, running away, causing wars, even how much that then would later impact David. I'm like, how healthy, how much would we literally, even today, us as a nation and Christians, I mean, today, how much would we have been impacted if just Saul wasn't insecure or felt like he needed to hold on a little longer? But he's like, yo, we're on the same team. If they give you 10,000 and they give me 1,000, at the end of the day, God's getting all of it. Like, yo, even I've always thought to myself, like, even the band, the Casting Crowns, I never liked Christian music when I was not a believer. My mom would force it on me. It's like, but the reason they're called that is, like, even if you're the best of the Christians, you get the most attention, you get the Billy Graham kind of name, if you will, and legacy, you got to cast that crown before God. So it's his. Like, I just, my hope is, and I want to encourage, and I really think this is on us as Xers and millennials, as I've always told Xers, y'all are like the bridge generation. Because you guys can connect to millennials. I always thought y'all could connect to me and my generation in a lot of ways, but you have the trust of the older generation. But I respect you guys, and you guys can get me to respect boomers more, but you also can get boomers to trust and believe and gamble on young people. And I kind of think millennials and Xers could do that together. Cause I do think boomers still have the most resources, the most, like, connections, the most power in a lot of ways, and authority. And older Xers are starting to as well. And then I think us millennials, although we're not just like Gen Z, I think millennials are more like Gen Z than they are like boomers or Xers. Oh, and so
no doubt.
My hope is, instead of millennials riding out their 30s and even their 40s, it's just like, yo, who cares? Let's get them what we wish we had. And luckily, lastly, I'll finish. It doesn't seem like people are going to be making fun of Gen Z as much as they made fun of millennials. Like, millennials really was. I mean, that
yeah, was you such got
a barrier.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely. No, I mean, I think, man, all that's so good, bro. And I love your story. What was his name? His name was Jordan, right? Right. That kid who was on there with you, man. I love that, man. And that's really, for us, it's like this, we're trying to, our tagline at UYWY is like, new leadership for a new world. Because really, like, I feel like the model of leadership that we've been given was what I call the great man syndrome. And it's built in the institutions, what you described, like, it's just about getting you to the next thing. Like, how big of a crowd can I get? And can I keep this machine going? Right. Just bigger, 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 bigger. And I've always struggled with that too. I was like, I don't really see Jesus in a lot of that. I struggle with a lot of that. And then if you had a great man that, you know, continue to do great things, then we gave them a lot of concessions to act in a lot of ridiculous ways, and which wasn't healthy for them. Wasn't healthy for their team or their church. And eventually when they win or if they fell, wasn't healthy for the kingdom. It de-evangelized the church, right?
Yeah.
So for me, leadership is like, you're helping people become who they are created to be. So one of the things that I see with Gen Z And I wonder what your thought is on this for millennials specifically. And you did talk a little bit about it with Gen X. So those who are in my generation, how can we join in better on what God's up to in the generations? But I know with Gen Z, they want mentors. Yeah. We're running around going, oh man, how are we going to disciple these kids? And I'm going, you know, they're asking to be mentored. Like, help me figure out this life, because they've kind of been born into, they kind of got the short hand, bro. Right. Mm-hmm. Like born around the Great Recession, like coming into going through a pandemic, right, when they're becoming adults. The political arena is insane, right? The space that our country is in, like, this is when they're growing up and they're going, yeah, like, how am I supposed to be an adult in this? And from the research, it looks like they're putting in there, if they can make money and get the right work, that some of that research like points to that. Mm-hmm. And I just want to go, dude, you can go for that, man, but that's not going to fulfill you, because I know what God has for you, right? I mean, the gospel and all that. Yeah. So, I mean, what's, you know, break it down for me, or your thoughts on. So in that sense, what should Gen X be doing? What should you and your generation doing so that we can best support Gen Z coming up? What, I mean, any thoughts on that? I know it's a big question, but.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's, I mean, I've shifted gears a lot towards Gen Z. I mean, I've always kind of those 450 young leaders in the network, I would say 80% of them, maybe even more, have always been millennials. They'd be 20 something now, early 30 something. But now, I mean, that's high priority. As much as I have a high priority of minority leaders and diverse leaders, I'm like Gen Z leaders, Gen Z diverse leaders, which luckily is kind of the future. Like you've already mentioned, that's who they are. And so, yeah, I would say for me, it's, I want to help find them when they're young and then start just bringing them. I guess I'll share a story of a guy, because he's my most recent dude, but there's a kid named Colin LaBrosse. If you have a kid who's on TikTok, I would tell you to follow him on TikTok. Colin LaBrosse, LaBrosse. He's a kid, half Mexican, half white, similar to myself. Actually, even half Mexican, half Irish, and very similar to myself because I'm half Mexican, half South African. So it's like two groups that just... What are you supposed to be like when you're Irish and Mexican or South African and Mexican? So we just kind of connected. His story is similar to me. Every now and then, only twice in my life, him being one of them. First time I met him, I said, "Hey, I don't know about you, but like I've got a lot of belief in you, and I feel like we could hang out a lot. But I'd like to take you under my wing if you're open to it. I know that's like asking you out on the first time I meet you in a way. Sure, yeah. But if you feel that too, like I'd like to help you, because." The kid has 500,000 young people, mostly Gen Z people following him on TikTok. And all he does is preach about Jesus. That's his thing. He's like, unlike millennials, where I feel like Xers, especially in boomers, I feel like kind of Xers actually, when they approach the church, they kind of made it a little more comfortable. Maybe older Xers. I feel like millennials try to make it more cool, honestly, and made it relevant. Like, let's make it not comfortable, but let's change the world and make church cool. I feel like this next generation, very revivalist, old school soul, kind of like, we just got to get them saved. We got to reach this generation. And so when I say that in social media, I mean, it's all about Jesus. You look at a millennial Christian, it's like, here's a little bit of cool in my profile, in my pictures, and here's a little bit of Jesus. Them is just straight Jesus is what I'm seeing a lot of. And so all that to say, yeah. I just like, yo, I want to take you under my wing. He's getting invited to several places in the country. And I, because his TikToks, and I asked him, I was like, how many times though have you ever preached over, let's just say 20 minutes? Because you, Tommy, you know, like the first time you ever speak, and it's like even 5 minutes, you're like, whoa, what will I say? Only five minutes. And now we're like, man, I wish I had 50 minutes. And all that to say, he's like, oh, I've only preached over 20 minutes, probably like twice. And he's traveling the country already because of his online influence. And I said, well, unless you're going to do, I know TikToks are 60 seconds, unless you're going to do like 20 of your best TikToks and it's like 20 little TED Talks. Right. I want to teach you like how to do an arc, but also my biggest thing, bro, is the tactics on how to preach. That's so easy in light of how to find your voice. I was like, that's what takes a long time. Because you could spend years, I see it all the time with young speakers, trying to sound like someone they're not, their favorite pastor, and it just doesn't work for them. And then they got to become secure in their identity. So I just want to help you find you. And then also to preach for the right reasons. Cause if you're doing off passion alone, like just how to go in with a pure heart, give it to God, and just, you're going to see God show up in big ways. So Anyway, just as I've taken him under my wing, I'm introducing him to anyone I know that I think he should know. And I'm not thinking, oh, well, if I introduce this kid, who's the new young kid, to this person, then they might not want to help me. Because I think that scarcity mindset also helps, hurts a lot of us from introducing and sharing our relationships, even sometimes our donors, where it's like, we don't truly believe God has cattle on a thousand hills. So one of my probably my biggest donors really did like them. I mean, so much so that I've been trying to get him to move to Nashville, which he literally just did 5 days ago. So I was like, yo, if you were here, I could truly like pour into you regularly. And I think this is a better city than Minneapolis personally for you to launch a lot of the stuff that you're trying to do. Cause he's in music and he's doing the social media. And so one of my donors, as he got to know him, just loved him. The kid never asked for money. And he said, I want to pay for you to move down there. I'll pay 4 months of rent. So you can be with Grant, you can be with Q down there. And yeah, let's launch what you're doing. I want you to get this to as many people as possible. And now, and then lastly, I spoke at a big conference. I was shocked. There was 1,000+ people in Dallas and live at this event. It was the biggest conference I've been during COVID. I was like, yo, I did not think this many people would still show up. But I brought them, first time I brought them to event with me. And day one, I'm like, hey, I'm going to have you speak too. Like, you're going to come up and pray us out at the end. Or we did Q&A for 30 minutes twice in a row. I was like, you're going to answer questions as Gen Z. And he was good. There was every now and then he did something. I was like, that was really good. But most of the time it was just okay. But I know he'll get better. Like we've seen that process. But I think my answer would be like, find at least one Gen Z leader and just go all in of like, how can I give him everything I wish someone gave to me? Not the wisdom, the relationships, the advice, the calling out. I mean, we talked about like, yo, when it comes to accountability, addiction and pornography is like going to be huge for that generation. And I was like, we're going to do this together. Like, I want you to be on mine. When it comes to Covenant Eyes, I want to be on yours, but like, I'm just calling them higher. I just think all of that. And lastly, I do think, if I could go back on my book, one thing I think I missed is, I think like emotional health is going to be huge for the next generation. I think if Pete Cazero could become best friends with Gen Z and even young millennials, that would really save a lot of that. You use the word de-evangelization because this might just be potentially, if we don't disciple this next generation, we're seeing a lot of leaders fall out of ministry out of the boomer generation. That's like grounded in the word, like steady. This generation barely knows it, and they go out and get 100,000 followers, and they're preaching barely what they kind of know.
Yeah,
traveling the world and getting huge book deals. We could see one of the worst group of Christians fall out of ministry just because they're not as rooted and grounded, because they're getting so much platform so soon that you can't microwave the character to sustain that. And so it's crucial that they do have these guys discipling them. I think, as I told you, all the influence they have, I think people would be shocked how much they are just like any other youth. If you went to a youth group, there's not much difference from these guys that have unbelievable online influence.
Yeah.
They still need to be poured into just like anyone else in college or in high school. And so I would say, just learning the emotional health, the steadiness. Lastly, I'll say like, because it's so easy to find passionate young people, so, so easy, but I say often, but it's very hard to find prayerful young people. It's hard to find ones that Sabbath. It's hard to find ones that really celebrate prayer, disciplines, all those types of things. And I just think that's going to be problematic when we got a very like Gary V hustle, grind, and Christian culture mixture. And it's only until you hit that burnout, which is, I think, getting younger and younger every year, that you're like, actually, I got to be healthy myself, right? Because I can't pour out what has an importance to me.
Man, I find, thanks for that. I what was so compelling about what you just shared that I had never thought of. So, I just want to pull that back out. It's this idea that if we don't reach even the ones that are on fire for Jesus, you know, like if we don't guide them, mentor them, disciple them, we could have an even bigger fallout than we're experiencing right now. I never, you know, honestly, Grant, I never thought about that. And that's so compelling to me. I mean, this is my business, right? This is what we do. I'm here to pour into your generation so that your generation reaches Gen Z with the gospel. Mm-hmm. And that by 2045, it's that generation that's running all the things. You know what I mean? They're running the institutions. They're in government. They're running the businesses. They're in entertainment. Like that. And I see a huge opportunity for revolution there, right? I'm like, oh, this could be so great. But I think that's so, that is so interesting, because I think the problem right now that I see with all of these pastors like falling is it's an institutional problem. You know, I go back to power structure. It's easy to point and go, oh, well, that guy, you know, he's morally. I'm like, yeah, but it's a system that continues to pump out those same leaders. Like, they, yes, they should own it themselves. They made choices. That's true. But can we talk about the system that supported that and that cheered them on into that toxicity? Yeah. And then this next generation is looking and going, this is what you want me to follow. This is no, I won't do it. So I find that really, really interesting, man. Okay. So dude, wrapping up, bro. And you gave some great stuff, man. So appreciate, even getting to know you more on this, man. This is great.
Yeah.
Front me a little bit, bro. What do I need to be doing? Right. My generation of leaders. So me and those ahead of me, dude, what do I need to be doing or aware of to best kind of pour into you, your generation? What's our responsibility right now? Where do we need to step up?
This might be a random answer. And I'll say this every time I get asked this question, because I do decently often, but I do think one of the most powerful things someone can do that no one usually says, and we may not realize the power that it can have, is I think us as a each generation needs to get better at calling out their own generation. I often tell people, like, I think every church should watch. I'm very influenced by Remember the Titans, or honestly, I'm on so many race panels over the last 5 years with all the racial tension, and it's always usually a black guy and an Asian guy. I always get to be the Mexican guy, and then there's some like white guy, black guy, Asian guy, Latino guy, maybe a girl, maybe possibly. And so with that, I feel like I'm always like, yo, these panels are great, but this isn't truly how you reconcile. Like, you don't want to talk about building relationships. I never want to do panels to build my friendships. That's like, you never see a marriage start and they'd be like, okay, how are we going to build this relationship? Let's go to a panel. It's like, what a pastoral thinking to think that that's what we should do to fix race relations. Like, I want to go on a retreat. That's why so many of the people on that Guatemala trip are close friends. We were all mostly strangers, but there's a bond that comes out of going somewhere for several days together. If you can go to another country, it truly is something about it. Like, that goal of a mission trip is to impact people in another country. But without a doubt, like, I don't think ever in history some people didn't come back really close friends. And that's 0% of the goal, not even kind of the goal, not even like any, there's no strategy put into, let's make sure these guys are best friends at the end of this. It just happens. Like, it's something about when you slow down, get out of your very, very busy life. You're no longer the leader. You don't really got good cell service. And you don't have control of the schedule. You gotta be you. Like, all these leaders that are used to being the leader just get to have fun, and someone else gets to be the leader. It's like the funnest thing ever. You just get to have fun and go to a place where the bond part of it is just you guys are the only thing similar. Everyone else in Guatemala was Guatemalan except for us. And even the black guys, like, I think it's like Jared Wilson, like, I think it was Jared, right?
Jared.
Okay, so Jared, I mean, we in a way have more similar to Jared than we do with the Guatemalans, even though we're different colors. But because, like, we're at least American, and we know American life more than Guatemalan. So my point is, I started looking at race relations, and I felt like it sounded very similar to the questions like, how do we fix race relations? To how do we fix generational relations? It's like, one, don't get white people to create things for minorities. Or AKA, don't get only older people to create things for next generation. Have them in the room. Like, almost everything for when helping hurts, I would apply to the next generation. Come in as the savior and think, hey, we're just going to create this for you. And then don't assume what they need. Talk to them and figure out what they actually need. Like, all these things apply to any new group of people. Some of these principles apply. But lastly, when I looked at Remember the Titans, I was like, that's the best movie of two races you know, there's a lot of racial reconciliation movies, The Blind Side, Glory Road. We talk about so many, but that's the one where there's so much tension between the black people and the white people. It's not like they tried to make act like it wasn't there, like Hidden Figures, where they try to work together, but the elephant in the room finally comes out. It's like day one, white players like, I'm not working for this black coach. They're like, I'm quitting the team if he's coming. And the black people are like, we don't want to be with you anyway. Go ahead. Like, there's this, even the parents are like, we hate y'all. Like, we're throwing bricks through your wall. The white coaches, I mean, parents are like, I don't want them to play for a black guy. And so very public division. My point is this, is like, there's something that happens when he takes them on a retreat and gets them to really build relationships together. And lastly, something he does, I think that we don't notice, is it was a very powerful moment in the movie. The thing that shifted at the retreat was not just the retreat, but it was when the white player, Bertier, who's the most influential among the white people, connects better with the black guy, who's the most, Julius, who's the most influential among black people. And Bertier eventually calls out the white players and says, you guys are not blocking for these, for the black players. And if you don't stop, I'm kicking you off the team. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where like the black guys notice that the white guy calls out the other white guys and is like, okay, we're going to start to really play then. And then the black guy starts calling out the black players for like not working better to protect and work with the white guys. And it was like, there's some, I could call out older generations all day. And I could do it well. I could do it biblically. I could do it where every single point I make is right. But it's still going to sound a little bit like I'm nagging. And sure, the same thing, older generations can call out young people all day biblically for all the right points, but it's still going to sound like they're kind of nagging. But when an older guy calls out other older guys, or at least when one generation calls out their generation, the young people start being like, yo, I'll follow that guy. Yeah. Because they just put their neck on the line for me. And I try to do that for my guys where I'm like, yo, young people, all you're doing is hanging out with young people. You are the dumbest young person I've ever met. Like, get around older generation, bro. Like, you're dumb. You think you're going to find a job? Can't find a job? Let me guess. None of your friends have jobs either. Oh, like, get around some older people, bro. Like, you want to know how to do marriage as well? Let me guess. You're getting advice from your single friends? Like, dude, let's do the math here, dude. What? And so I'm going to call them out. And I think the more I've seen them do that, the more I've seen young people be like, okay, I'm in. He's got our back. He'll even call out his own for that. And I think that's a powerful thing to do to win over the next generation and create a healthier culture in whatever group you're a part of.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I feel that, dude. I mean, one of the things too that I've just in leadership, our leadership principle is, you know, own your mistakes and say sorry, you know, soon. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, I've even been doing, you know, you get teaching things here and there, or they want you to make a video or whatever. And a lot of times they're for this next generation coming up, right? It's either millennials or Gen Z that I'm like speaking for. Last couple of times, I start the whole thing out with an apology, because I just want to go, look, let's just call it out right now. I'm sorry. Like we have, and I own it too, even though sometimes I want to be like, oh, that really wasn't me. But you know what I mean? Like, you got to own that. Yeah, just be like, look, man, I love what you said earlier too, where I'm like, hey man, we handed you off something lame. And you're like, oh, did you hand it off? Cause I didn't, I'm still waiting for to receive that, bro. You know what I mean? And so, but definitely there's that, man. And I think, that's helpful, man. And I think, you know, honestly, you said it, that Gen X, you know, so if you're listening to this podcast and you're around my age, I'm 42, you know, a little bit younger, a little bit older, you know, I call myself a bridge person. And so, and you said, hey, you guys are kind of like a bridge generation. And I think we really are, man. And, you know, we're punk rock, hip hop enough, to be like, all right, man, let's really pour into and get these younger cats right. By learning from our mistakes or the things that are, you know, here's what we've learned from this. And really look at it, as our mandate and call, because we're kingdom people, towards the mentoring and the discipleship of this next generation, man. And so, friends, if you're listening to this, man, you got to give away power. You got to make room. You got to give up your seat. You know what I mean? You got to build whatever you're building and or leading and running. And you got to work. You know, we always talk about, you got to work yourself out of job. Well, no, you got to actually do it. And that's scary. Especially when you got the mortgage and you got the kids and you got the, you know, all that kind of stuff. But isn't that the radical way of Jesus? And basically, we've seen what status quo gets us. A mess of a country. Non-leadership from our government officials, right, left, you name it. It's been insane to watch the ridiculousness of these men, mostly men and women, that just will refuse to lead. They're selfish. And we have this opportunity to, you know, own that and do it differently, man. And so, Grant, man, thanks so much, dude, for your time, brother. Thanks for jumping on, bro. Yeah. Okay, how can people follow you? How can they catch what you're doing? Where can they get your book? Like, just,
yeah.
You know, let us know.
The book is on Amazon. It's called The Passion Generation. Seemingly reckless, definitely disruptive, but far from hopeless millennials. And so,
I love it.
Yeah, Passion Generation. And then for me, I mean, great thing about my dad being South African, I guess, and not many being here is I've just never in my entire life seen my last name before anywhere else. And so I'm the only Grant Skeldon I know of, and I've Googled to try to find others. So hopefully there are some out there, but everything I have is Grant Skeldon, grantskeldon.com, at Grant Skeldon, whatever it may be, / Grant Skeldon. If it's a online platform, it's just my name.
Hey, that's not a bad deal right there, bro.
No, it's great. It's
God
great.
Has shined on you, especially in this age. So, dude, that is awesome, yeah. Man. Well, hey, friends, thanks so much for joining us today. Grant, thank you again, brother. It's great to get to know you a little bit better and love everything you're doing. We're actually, we're so much more aligned than I even realized. So you probably were already on that. I'm slow. So I'll model it. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? I just didn't know yet, man. So, but man, big fan and want to continue to support you and what you're doing. I hope we can partner in different ways in the future. But friends, thanks for joining us on another episode of the Futures Here podcast. We hope to see you guys next time. Peace.
If you enjoyed what you heard today, we don't want to leave you empty-handed. So here's a couple resources to help you shape the future. Get access to our latest leadership resource by visiting uywy.org and join our email list.